Major Tony Hibbert, reel one.
You were a gunner, obviously, from what you just said. And you came back from Dunkirk. And joined No. 2 Commando. Were you... September, you must have been sort of one of the early ones to join. Which troop were you in?
Well, I joined in... October's 10th, yes. I actually joined, I think, on the 10th of October.
Right.
And I was sent up to Scotland to raise troops for officers and troops for H Troop.
You were the troop commander?
I was the second in command.
Right. And at that stage, Jackson was the CO.
Jackson was the CO.
And did you do parachuting out off the back of a Whitley, or had they stopped doing that by the time
they stopped?
They stopped doing
that. But of course, at that stage, I hadn't done any parachuting.
Right.
I was just taken on.
Right.
Accepted into two commander with, I may say, no medical at all.
And right.
If I'd had a proper medical, I'd never have been accepted, because I'd had broken both my eardrums in the Dunkirk operation.
Yeah.
And there were other people. Chris Maud only had, I think, three toes on his right foot, and they never spotted that. Half the officers in Number 2 Commander, I suspect, would never have got in if there'd been a medical. It was a sort of indication of the rather slap-happy way the organisation was recruited.
In those days, certainly this comes across in a chap called Lawley's report.
Mm-hmm.
Which he's left in the archives, he's dead now, which said he was actually, I think, about 30-something when he joined.
Yeah.
Had been a bus driver.
That's right.
And he said, there's no medical.
That's
at
right.
All.
That is right. Absolutely right. For the crack unit.
For the crack unit. Army. And you then trained and did parachuting. Did you jump out of a Bombay ever?
No. No, only out of
the Whitley Hole. And then, as I recall, there was a Trigino operation, which presumably everyone volunteered for, but only were a few selected.
Well, in fact, they just took selected officers and men from two troops.
Right.
Much, I may say, to the fury of the rest of us, because we knew nothing about it until
it happened. The sort of spirit of Number 2 Commando, 11 SS. There were a lot of soldiers of fortune, weren't there? I mean, chaps who'd been in wars all over the place before.
Yes, and certainly in the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah.
There were a very mixed crowd, and a considerable number of, known criminals. And
right.
They were first-class chaps.
Right, but needed really
they
good
needed
needed commanding.
They needed good leadership.
Yeah.
And something to do.
Right, yeah. Now, did you stay in... You were there with Eric Down when he took over, were you?
Yes, because, of course, two commando then just was changed into 11th SAS battalion.
Right.
You got all the details of that.
Right.
Into a parachute wing, a glider wing.
Right, yeah.
The glider wing was the start of the glider pilot regiment.
Right.
Parachute wing was the first stage of the formation
right,
of the parachute
right.
regiment. And then you got the date again, I've got it somewhere if you haven't. The 11th SAS battalion was turned into the 1st battalion, the 1st parachute battalion.
The parachute battalion, yes.
And I think it became the glider wing was hired off to become the glider pilot regiment. But then the 1st parachute battalion existed just as such for a period, and then when the 1st Brigade was formed under Windy Gale, it became the Parachute Regiment, and the 1st Battalion became the 1st Battalion and the Parachute Regiment.
Right. And Eric Down was the CO at that stage, wasn't he?
And Eric Down took over as the CO of the 1st Battalion.
And Then
the
he...
most, and the most unpopular, most hated CEO that
well, I know
ever it, it ever had.
Vic Coxon called him Drax.
Dracula.
He was known as Dracula.
Was called, well, he was called Dracula when he was in England, and Sirocco when later on. He was absolutely ruthless, and he returned a high percentage of the troops to their units, mostly for on medical grounds.
Yes.
But some on
disciplinary grounds.
Yes. And I think at one stage, I think that's not for writing, but I think that if he'd led them into action, I think he had a good chance of having a
bullet in the back.
Bullet in the back. I mean, you know, he they were nearly mutinous. They were when he marched into he would have a bring them all into a hall. Give them a pep talk, and they would clamp their feet in to his, and he got a bit of booing and hissing, but he stood up to it, and by the time that he left to form the 2nd Parachute Brigade, they'd have followed him anywhere. They absolutely worshipped him. They saw what he'd been trying to do, and they approved very much of it. And he turned that rather raggle-taggle unit, I think, into the finest battalion in the British Army. It really was outstanding.
Yeah.
He was very tough for them. You know, here on field firing exercises, he would make us walk right up into the artillery barrage.
Right.
And he said, unless and until we had something like 5% of shells landing behind our leading troops, we weren't doing our job properly.
Right.
The troops didn't much like it.
This is on field firing exercises.
This is on field firing exercises in...
Had he been in the First World War?
Yeah, he had. Yeah.
So he had battle experience.
Yeah.
He was a man for leaning on the barrage.
Yeah.
As they called
That's
it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, quite right.
Quite right, yeah.
But they didn't like it when...
No.
25 pounders started pounding in amongst them.
No, quite. But he was obviously... a fantastic man, wasn't
he? Oh, he
everyone
really
says
was.
So.
And, you know, I mean, I've seen him, because having up one chap who was a persistent offender, he was always going absent, well, coming back late from leave, and he sent this chap, he gave him a really stunning punishment, and really shook him, and... he said he marched him out and then marched him back again and said, Corporal, whatever it is, I've given you a heavy punishment and you deserve every day of it, but I know that you are married. I know that this will mean that your wife will be deprived of money. You don't deserve it, but I will ensure that she is not does not lose out because of your stupidity. And he actually paid her out of his own pocket. And of course, you know, the troops, they hear about this thing.
Yeah,
and
appreciate
it. He's a very good man.
Yeah. He's dead now.
He's dead.
Yeah. Then he went to command the 2nd Brigade, didn't he?
He...
When it was
he
raised.
He was left. What happened was that the 1st Battalion sailed out to for the North Africa landing.
Yeah.
And he remained behind to form the 2nd Parachute Brigade.
Yeah.
And he asked me if I would stay with him as his IO. And you know Bala Breeden?
Yes.
Well, Bala Breeden came in direct from the Staff College as his brigade major.
Right.
And Henry Preston as DA and QNG.
Right.
Good chap, Bala Breeden.
He's been around, hasn't he?
Oh, but now there's a fighting,
yes,
a fighting leader, very very brave and a very good leader.
Yes, yeah, I must go and see him. Actually.
Oh, you must.
Just going back a bit, James Hill then when did James Hill take over? About August? About Dieppe time, I think, wasn't it? Because you were about to go to Dieppe, or what, so if I do the first
No. Eric Dunne was commanding at the Dieppe raid. Yet another of the ghastly... I mean, there we were actually... We were sitting in our aeroplanes.
Probably a good thing you didn't go, actually, on reflection.
You will never tell. It was fairly windy on the other side, but if it had been reasonable, I think we might have done it. After all...
What were you going to do?
We were going to do the job that Four Commando...
Farraville Battery.
...did, yes.
Yeah.
We were going to take out the batteries on either side, actually. I think we could have done it.
Yes,
I don't see any. Actually...
Probably better.
There is, not for your book, I think, but an amusing story there, because we were marched out to these planes. And they were Whitlers still in those days. We'd been sitting in the damn planes for about an hour and a half. This was, I don't know, about 5 o'clock in the morning, or thereabouts by this time. Suddenly there was a fearful banging on the door of our Dakota, so we opened it up, and there was one of our officers, absolutely purple in the face. He said, let me get at him. His batman had forgotten to wake him. You just see his excuse if the operation had gone off.
Gone.
This is just one of the many operations which were laid on and cancelled, which is bad for morale.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yes. Now, and there was another, the Alderney, wasn't there? And then you were Ushant as well.
That's right.
And James Hill was then the CO, wasn't he?
I don't think James Hill took over until they actually sailed for North Africa.
No, he says he took over before that.
I feel absolutely sure that Eric Dunne
was there for Dieppe anyway.
Yeah, because I remember how popular he was, because he very dangerous too. He would have lost his hide if he had everyone together after the thing was stood down and said, "Look, I know how frustrated you all are by this, and I can trust you to keep absolutely quiet and not mention this to anyone, and I trust you so much I'm going to give you all 48 hours leave." So we all rushed off to London and got pissed as hell and went back, and of course 3 weeks later the damn thing was laid on, much to our fury.
Yeah.
But I'm quite sure that
Eric Dunne was here.
Eric Dunne gave us leave.
Okay.
I can't remember when the Dieppe, what month Dieppe. Anyhow, you can work it out. James Hill will have, his facts, but certainly Eric Dunne took over the 2nd Brigade and remained behind.
And took you on as his Brigade IO.
Yes.
The James Hill was presumably different to Eric Dunne. Was he a different character?
Oh, totally. James Hill, a very highly strung person, and initially, I think, until he settled down, until he'd been wounded, he tended to, I think, to be too highly strung for the 1st Battalion.
Yeah.
Then, of course, he led that magnificent night raid in North Africa, where he got wounded.
Mm.
Have you met Miles Whitelock?
No.
Miles Whitelock got the end of his nose blown off, and Arthur Kellis, who's writing this book,
right,
super chap, you want to meet him. he lost his eye. But this was an absolute talk about Jones leading the battalion from in front. Old James Hill led a night patrol from the front without any reconnaissance and marched them straight into a German position.
Yeah.
And where they came across the first tank, and old James Hill got out his stick, banged on the thing. He said, "Come out, you." So the chap came out and shot him. I said, somehow it could only happen. But he recovered from that and absolutely determined to win, to get back his command. And he then commanded the 1st Battalion very well, and then, of course, joined 6th Division, and he commanded 6th Division right to his brigade, and did remarkably well.
Yes.
But initially, I think that rather like Colonel Pritchard, Pritchard, he was one of the highly strung leaders, as against the more relaxed leadership of John Frost, Vic Coxon, and Alistair.
Right.
Which worked, I think, better.
Right.
Because if the leader is relaxed, the troops
Are
relaxed.
Quite.
And in battle, you want people to be reasonably relaxed. Otherwise,
quite.
People get twitched.
Yeah. So, you raised the 2nd Brigade with Eric Dunn.
With Eric Dunn.
You took the 4th Battalion out of the 1st Brigade.
Yes.
And then the other two, 5th
and 6th. Well, you see, 5th Scottish and 6th Welsh were more or less almost a conversion.
Right. What's your view on the merits or others of a conversion as opposed to all volunteers?
I think it worked very well. I think both 5th and 6th Battalion were very good.
Yeah.
I think, after all, what is the important factor in war? It is comradeship and getting on, you know, trusting your next door neighbour. And if you've all got a good strong Welsh accent or an old Scots accent,
quite,
you understand each other's thinking and speech.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea.
The brigade then trained in England.
Trained in England.
And then went out with the rest of the division.
Went out to
North Africa.
Yes.
And you then had that very disappointing thing of not going to on the Augusta drop.
Yes.
Was that bitterly disappointed? Were people really hacked off?
They really were, yes. I mean, you know, mind you, having been over the ground afterwards.
I'm glad you didn't.
Bloody rough job.
Yes.
But yes, I mean, we're really, morale was getting very, very low then.
Really, yes.
Very bad.
Do you think that, and this is slightly heading, but it's very interesting to get people's views on it, because, you know, it's sort of thing one can talk about, perhaps. Johnny Frost, in his book, reckons that the division was wrongly used in Sicily, and it should have been used as a division to be dropped, in fact, north of the Promissory Bridge into the Catania Plain, rather than being dropped in brigade packets, as it were, in dollops ahead of the army as it advanced. I mean, is that a valid point or not?
Well, I don't think we had enough planes to drop more than a brigade at a time.
No.
So that it would have been dropped in three packets.
Yeah.
The Germans were dropping, his idea was that they would have dropped on the first day in the container.
Yes, I'm presuming it would have been necessary in three packets.
I think it probably would have been a very good. It was a long way ahead of our advance at that stage.
Right.
I don't think
it would have been a good idea.
I don't think it would have been considered a very good idea at that time.
No.
I mean, in retrospect, probably the best, most effective way would have been to have just spread us all out over an enormous blanket, because as it was, because we were dropped so far, you know, so dispersed, that it caused an immense degree of confusion. And the Germans were getting...
running hither and thither. I mean, rather like the confusion caused by the various scattered drops of the 6th Airborne Division in Normandy, where people were rushing about all over the place, didn't actually know where the DZ was.
That's right, yeah.
No.
No,
yeah.
I think they were probably wrongly used. I mean, certainly they were wrongly used in Sicily. I suspect, you know, Monty always said, I can win my battles without my airborne troops.
Did he say that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's much to our dismay and fury.
And did he publicize that? He said it?
Well, he said it to Goofy Salmon. Did you ever meet Gofton Salmon?
No.
Geoffrey Gofton Salmon?
Wasn't he the CEO of the second battle that I took over?
Yes, he took over. Yes, that's right. He fell in his head. I think, well, certainly in Arnhem, if you consider that if all those logistic sources had been put into backing up the ground forces instead of dropping the airborne forces ahead of them, it's conceivable we could have done better. It's difficult to know. No, I don't think I would have gone for the containment.
No.
But that's another point.
Okay. Then everyone was back in North Africa again.
Yes.
Waiting to go to...
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then Taranto came up.
And then Taranto.
And did the 2nd Brigade lead that?
Yes, they did.
You were the first ashore.
Yes, yes, yeah.
How did that sort of arise? Can you remember it? How did that?
You mean?
How did that?
Funnily enough, I was just wondering what I could contribute, and at that particular time I was IO of 1st Brigade.
Right.
And this was the account of the landing that I wrote at the time. Immediately afterwards, and well, basically, I think it's what I said here that with the fall of Mussolini, a fascist party. On 4th September, conference in Sicily, Alexander and Hopkinson, who was commanding brigade, Italians expressed willingness for Italian armed forces to capitulate and aid the Allies to clear the Germans out of Italy. Italian fleet was prepared to hand itself over immediately. Outcome of conference, Operation Olive Tree, one airborne div to embark on cruisers, sail to Taranto, occupied and defended against any Germans in the neighborhood. 6th of September, operation would take place on this 11th to coincide with Avalanche, which was the Salerno landing. Later in the day, the brigade was informed operation put forward to the 7th, and because of the rush, we just had to leap straight into our transport and go straight to Bizerta, where we embarked on a force of 6 cruisers, protected by 2 battleships and a destroyer screen.
It was just a brigade on 6 cruisers?
Yeah.
Right.
Wait a minute. No, the general plan was as follows. 1 airborne division under command, two brigade, 4 brigade, less 1 battalion, SAS battalion, recce squadron, troop of anti-tank battery and company of RE to embark on a force of 6 cruisers at Bizerta. Protected by 2 battleships and a destroyer screen to sail into Taranto Harbor unopposed, disembark and take up defensive positions around town. 4th Brigade moving to Massafra to be responsible for the west. 2 Brigade moving north of the old town to be responsible for the north. And 5 Parabatan Scots moving to St. Giorgio to the east. We embarked on the 8th, and on the 9th we picked up KG-5 and the Howe, destroyer screen, eventful and pleasant voyage, arriving Taranto at 1400. Do you want all this?
No. Just give me the sort of outline. Mm.
Yeah. Well, there was an interesting thing, actually. The Italian fleet had been ordered to pull out of Taranto the day before and give itself up at Malta, but there were still 2 battleships of the Cavour class and 2 cruisers in the harbour. Italian pilot didn't come out. 1630, Italian fleet steamed out of Taranto, sailing west, and at 5 o'clock our cruisers put in Taranto, 3 hours behind schedule. I must say, not for the thing, but at 5:15, a lone trimotor JU-52 took off from Taranto airfield, which was literally about 1,000 yards north of where we were landing. You could hear the engines revving up, the pilot shouting, chocks away, he was dead still. And he flew low over the harbour, right over the entire British fleet.
Right.
I mean, you so low that you could see the chap looking out of the window. And the cruiser next to us was sort of, everyone was pairing up until eventually somebody shouted out, "Ack-ack, gunners," and so they were rushed off along the deck, got onto their Bofors, and were busy traversing the Bofors, and the chap with the ammunition loader got in, but the chap elevating didn't arrive in time, so the chap started firing while they were still traversing, and the gun was pointing horizontal, and we were all standing up on the deck of the Sirius, and the entire deck was raked by Bofors, thank God, about 6 inches below the top of the deck, so that we were all, you know, if it had been 6 inches higher up, whole bloody brigade headquarters would have been clobbered.
The Abdil was blown up on a mine.
The Abdil was blown up on a mine, but a lot later, at about 1:30 in the morning. But the brigade landed without opposition and moved north. But again, you know, back to the old Jones thing, Colonel Dean, well, the first thing that happened, Hopkinson, he went forward to reconnoitre a small scrap initiated by the 4th Battalion. He got killed. Colonel Dean went forward to reconnoitre a bridge where there was a bit of a hold-up. He got captured. Even old Eric Dunn, when we were advancing north, said, "Come on, Tony, let's go out in a couple of jeeps and find out what's happening on the front, because we don't seem to be moving fast enough, and I'm sure that there was the German parachute division. I don't think there are any of them around." And so we went shooting off, and we went about 15 miles, I think, north of the our own front line, and we sculled around, and in one case there were German motorcycle troops moving out of one end of the village and we moved to the other. But, you know, but for the grace of God, there would have been yet another brigade corps to come up the spout. I think it's a tradition in the parachute regiment that the troops are led from the front. It may not be militarily according to the book, but I think it's good for morale generally.
That was that operation. Was there very much hard fighting, or was it?
No. There were battalion. There were company engagements.
Right.
We were opposed to the first German parachute troops in the first German parachute division. But I mean, we were both holding a front of. God knows. 50-mile front with two brigades.
Yeah.
And there were an awful lot of static places to be defended. So it was a fairly delightful campaign. Charming. Yeah. Weather was beautiful, the wine was plentiful. The first thing that happened was that we captured a German Nazi dump with 1,000 cases of wine. Italian wine and 500 cases of Hennessy's brandy.